The Grilly Truth Sports Network, the NFL show, as always, is brought to you by PathofPurity.direct. Organic CBD is a tablet you put under your tongue. It goes immediately into your bloodstream. And then over the next 12 hours, time releases. So it's one pill for the entire day. So make sure you check out PathofPurity.direct. And right now, if you go to PathofPurity.direct, you get 2 months supply for the price of one. So I think it's $75 for 2 months. You're not going to find a better deal, and you're not going to find a better product CBD-wise anywhere on the market. I'm your host for the NFL show, Mike Goodpaster. Right now, I'd like to welcome in my co-host, Sam Teeds. How you doing, Sam?
Doing great, Mike. How about you?
I don't know. You look extraordinarily happy today.
I'm just ready to get torn apart here from my list, because I know I probably have a couple teams that you do as well, but there's certainly going to be a lot of differences here.
Let's see. We got to pull the list up. We should have been more prepared and had it up, but I'm doing it right now. All right. So the top 10 teams that did not win the Super Bowl, I think the number one on this is pretty easy. We'll probably both have the same one because it's hard to pass up that. But we're going to go ahead. Give us your number 10.
Yeah, my number 10 is the 1969 Minnesota Vikings. I kind of went back and forth between them and the 76 team. Of course, the Vikings didn't win a Super Bowl under head coach Bud Grant, and they lost in 69 to the Kansas City Chiefs, 7-23. I think that was the Len Dawson-led Kansas City Chiefs at the time. And so this was a very well-rounded Minnesota Vikings team that offensively has 12th in passing, fourth in rushing yards. Defensively, they were first in pass defense, second in rush defense. And of course, they had a multitude of Hall of Famers, especially on the defensive side of the ball, with guys like Alan Page and Paul Cross.
All right. I would not put them in the top 10 because their quarterback play was Joe Capp. And you said they were 12th in the league in passing, right?
Yes.
How many teams were in the league?
Probably not as many as there are.
I think it was 12. Maybe 14. The AFL and the NFL were separated.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot.
So I think this. Yeah. They got beat by one of the great teams in NFL history. And that Vikings team dominated everybody. Didn't they win the NFL championship like 38-0 over the Colts or the Browns?
It was 27-7.
27-7 over the Browns. Yeah, it was a great defensive football team, but that team really didn't take off until they got Fran Tarkington. But just like the other teams, like I said, that Chiefs team, I mean, Otis Taylor was the best wide receiver in the NFL at that time. He's a man that I think it's criminal that Drew Pearson is in the Hall of Fame and Otis Taylor's not. Otis Taylor was significantly better than him. Otis Taylor was significantly better than almost anybody that ever played the game. You had a Hall of Fame quarterback, so they got beat up by a really good Chiefs team. But I think the Vikings and Joe Capp at quarterback was kind of the killer there.
Yeah, and I did throw out the idea maybe like the 76 team instead for Minnesota. Of course, I have another 76 team on this list, so I passed them this time around. That 76 team, I think Fred Tarkin was on the team that year. And, of course, they had Chuck Foreman at that time.
All right. My number 10 is the 1988 Cincinnati Bengals. And the reason I say that is you had a team that running game, the 88 Bengals brought in zone running concepts, the zone blitz with Dick LeBeau, the no-huddle offense. Nobody had done it the way the Bengals did until then. They beat the Bills in the playoffs 21-10, and then the next year, you know, Marv Levy invented the no-huddle offense and got all the credit for it when it was actually Sam Weish. But the 88 Bengals team was a dominant team that started a year out 6-0. They lost the first game of the season, in week six, to Doug Flutie and the New England Patriots. We're down, I think, 20-0. They ended up losing 27-21. But I think the 88 Bengals, when you look at what they did in the playoffs, they were a team that was known for their offense, throwing the ball deep, Eddie Brown, Chris Collinsworth, Boomer Esiason, who had an MVP year that year. And by the time you get to like week 12 or 13, the deep passing game's gone. Boomer Esiason had a shoulder issue, which made it so he couldn't really throw it. But you had running backs in James Brooks, Icky Woods, both around 1,000 yards. Stanley Wilson, who might have been better than both of them. Of course, we know what happened to Stanley in the Super Bowl. But when you look at the playoff run, they beat the Seattle Seahawks, I think it was 21-13. They beat the Bills 21-10. They did that with their defense. And people forget, Jerry Rice went off in Super Bowl 23. That Bengals defense still held them to 13 points until that last drive. So if Boomer Esiason, who makes me sick every time I see him on TV because of this, doesn't go like 11-26 for 120 yards at an interception, the Bengals win this game. The Bengals were the better team in 1988. they were better all year than the 49ers, and they fell short at the end, probably because Bill Walsh was a better coach than Sam Weish, and Joe Montana was worlds better than Boomer Esiason. So that's my number 10. My number 9, the 1976 Pittsburgh Steelers. We had Rocky Blyer on last week who talked about this team. In my opinion, they had the greatest defense in NFL history. They started the season 1-4. Of course, Turkey Jones, you know, almost killed Terry Bradshaw, slamming him on the head. And then even with Mike Krusek at quarterback, this is a team that won 9 straight games. And in those 9 games, they only gave up 28 points. They beat the Bengals 7-3 in a defensive struggle in the snow. And then they played the Baltimore Colts, who were very good. They had Burt Jones. They're in Baltimore. And the Steelers have Terry Bradshaw back. They win the game 40-14. And, you know, the problem with that was they had everybody back healthy for that game. They dominate the Colts 40-14. But Franco Harris and Rocky Blyer were lost to injury. They were unable to play the next week in a 24-7 loss to the eventual Super Bowl champion Oakland Raiders. So injuries killed them, but they win 9 straight games without Terry Bradshaw. And, you know, Mike Krusek makes Mason Rudolph look like Ben Roethlisberger.
Oh, yeah, and that defense held. They had 5 shutouts that year, and they also held 2 other teams to 3 points and 1 other team just 6 points on the day. And that was actually the Cincinnati Bengals in week 6.
Yeah, and that Bengals, that Bengals team was top 3 in offense in the NFL that year.
Yeah, they went 10-4.
Yeah, I mean, the Bengals were a really good team, and it always happened to us. The year before, we were 11-3. We snuck in but lost by 3 to the Raiders. Who do you got at number 9?
Number 9, I believe this is a team that isn't on your list, actually. You have the 1992 San Francisco 49ers.
They are not.
And looking at them, their defense was not as good as I think the teams we just talked about with Minnesota. And, of course, with Pittsburgh, they didn't have a great pass defense. Well, they did finish 4th in run defense. The offense doesn't really carry the team 3rd both passing and rushing yards. That was Steve Young. I think that was his first MVP year. I think it was his 2nd year as a full-time starter. Montana was still on the roster, but he wasn't playing most of the time. They also had Ricky Waters at running back. Quite a few players. Jerry Rice is obviously still on that team. And they have to be going 14-2, but lose the conference championship to the Dallas Cowboys 20-30.
Yeah, and most people thought that they were going to beat that Cowboys team. And, I mean, I you said it. They were 14-2. I think they were fairly favored. And I do think Montana played against, I think it was the Lions on Monday Night Football, like the last game of that year, but I'm not sure about that, so don't hold me to it. But
he got into 1 game that year. Yeah, he got into 1
game. It was the last game of the season they gave to him to be able to play in that game. And this is a team that Tom Rappin, Ricky Waters, of course you had Jerry Rice, John Taylor still, great football team. And the thing I remember about them is the Bills were a great team that year, and the Bills beat them in one of the best regular season games you'll ever see, 34-31 in San Francisco. And then I think they got upset by the Cardinals that year. And then they go into the playoffs, and that Cowboys team, nobody knew it at the time, but that Cowboys team would be one of the great teams of all time.
Yeah, it's kind of a huge turning point in history when you think about what Dallas goes on to do after that, which they have Jimmy Johnson. Well, obviously, if he'd stuck around longer, I think they would have won a lot more than Jerry Jones, you know, getting his ego in the way and kicking Jimmy Johnson out the door. But they had Troy Aikman, Emmitt Smith. That's that legendary Dallas Cowboys team right there that goes on to win multiple Super Bowls.
Well, the interesting thing there is if you can keep him there, then maybe Jimmy Johnson and them Cowboys played the greatest show on turf. That'd have been a good football game.
No, that would have been a great one. Think about all the Hall of Famers involved in that matchup.
Yeah, and you'd also would have had the Packers, because if you remember, in the playoffs, it seemed like the Cowboys almost always beat the Packers and the Eagles and the 49ers to get to the Super Bowl, one combination of that or another. And you would have had that Packer team that won Super Bowl 31, you know, against Jimmy Johnson, may change everything. Maybe Brett Favre doesn't even have a Super Bowl title then.
Yeah, that changes quite a bit about his legacy. Having one Super Bowl puts him, I know you don't love Brett Favre a lot, but having one Super Bowl really helps him out quite a bit. If he had none, That's a pretty big mark against any quarterback.
Yeah. Number 8, I've got the 1990 Buffalo Bills. And I would say up until that point, I think with number 1, this was the best of the 4 Bills Super Bowl teams, because I think their defense was much better. And I think up to this point, maybe the greatest offense in NFL history. And it was proven when they beat the LA Raiders 51-3. They were fair. I think they were touchdown favorites against the Giants. The Giants dominated time of possession, but this is a team you had Andre Reed, Jim Kelly. You had a great defense. The defense progressively got worse after that. A lot of that, I think, was Shane Conlon, who with injuries, they lost Conlon, who was a player. But you had Bruce Smith, maybe the best pass rusher in NFL history. Marv Levy, very good football coach. But I would say this year, because I think this is also the year where Bill Belichick really put his place on the game. When people say, can Belichick win without Brady? I think there's no doubt defensively, Bill Belichick may be the best defensive coordinator in NFL history. And what he did, playing two down linemen in that game, letting the Bills run. Thurman Thomas had a huge game. But what it did is it slowed down that Bills offense. They didn't really even run the K-gun in that game. And the Giants kind of dumbed it down, controlled the tempo, and won the game.
Yeah, and I think this is the best – this Bills – also, on Bill Belichick, people forget, Bill Belichick won two Super Bowls with the New York Giants before going to New England eventually. So people forget that he actually has more Super Bowl titles than Tom Brady, technically, on his resume. But
for now,
looking at the Bills team, this is probably the best combination of offense and defense they had. They had a top 10 passing and rushing attack, and their defense was also top 10 passing and middle league in rushing. But after that, the defense really drops off significantly, especially the pass coverage. After this 1990 season, and by the time you hit 1992, 1993, those defenses are a lot weaker, and the offense is starting to crumble a bit a little bit as well. I have them at the same spot you do. I have at number 8. Unfortunately, I have to agree with you here on at least one of these things late in this top 10.
Why is that unfortunate? It means you're right on one.
I could be on right. I also like to mix it up a little bit. You know me. I don't mind being wrong.
I know.
It happens all the time.
Broncos are going to the playoffs, Sam. Go ahead.
Hey, 2021 Denver Broncos, I'm telling you. No, okay. No, they won't. No, I don't believe that anymore. I'm not going to make the same bet twice. But
all right.
No, I think Thurman Thomas is probably one of the lifebloods of this team at this time. Just think about his best seasons, 1990, 91, also 92, 93 up there as well. Those are probably his four best seasons of his career. That's what really helps out this offense.
All right, who do you got at number 7, Sam?
Number 7, I have the 1983 then Washington Redskins, and this was a team that just had a bunch of talent. I don't think they had as many standout guys, some of the teams we talked about so far, but this is a team that just played well. I looked at their roster that season. They had a bunch of guys who maybe made only one or two All-Pro teams in their entire careers, but they had a bunch of guys who made it that season in 1983. So a bunch of guys had career years, came together, and really uplifted this team. They went 14-2 under Joe Gibbs, and they made it to the Super Bowl, where they got smacked by the Raiders 38-9. So it's unfortunate the way they ended, but they had great offense. They had a very good rushing defense. Possibly the best rushing defense in the NFL that year.
All right. I have them higher, so I'll talk about them later. Number 7, I've got the 1968 Baltimore Colts. They're the team that lost Super Bowl III to the New York Jets. And it actually ended up being the best thing for all parties involved. It was probably worth billions of dollars. And I think it will go down as the biggest game in NFL history. And their greatness of this Colts team, coached by Don Shula, was why the game was so important. And the stat from this team that really blows my mind is they surrendered 10 points or less, an amazing 10 times. Offensively, they were just as good. They scored 27 points or more 10 times. They enjoyed a points per game difference of almost 3 touchdowns a game. They were undefeated on the road. And until losing Super Bowl III to the Colts, there were many who were calling this Colts team the greatest in NFL history. And if they had beat the Colts in this game, they probably would have went down as the greatest team in NFL history. And the interesting thing here is this. Johnny Unitas didn't play in this Super Bowl until the last 5 or 6 minutes when they were down 16-0. Earl Morrill had actually started a game because Unitas was hurt. It was 16-0, no 2-point conversion. So the game was pretty much over when they put Unitas in. And then Unitas gave everybody a taste of what possibly could have been by taking the Colts straight down the field and scoring a touchdown. This is also the game to put Joe Namath into the Hall of Fame. He shouldn't even have been the MVP of this game. It should have been Matt Snell. But the 1968 Baltimore Colts are my number 7.
Yeah, Unitas didn't. I don't think Unitas started any games that year. He might have gotten to a few, but it was Morrill played most of them, right?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, Morrill was a really good quarterback, but he was a backup most places because he goes to Baltimore. Johnny Unitas is the starter. He goes to Miami. It's Bob Greasy. You got two Hall of Fame quarterbacks in front of you.
Yeah, it's hard to make do with that, but sometimes it also makes you look very good when you can come in and play well. Unfortunately, didn't play well on stretch in that Super Bowl game. They had a bunch of underrated offensive weapons. Guys like Jimmy Orr, Willie Richardson. They had John Mackey, obviously.
Well, you had Raymond Berry, too, one of the greatest wide receivers in NFL history.
Yeah, they had so many weapons here. I think a couple of them are in the Hall of Fame, but a lot of them kind of been forgotten for just how good they were.
Bubba Smith?
Hey, they had, like I said, they had a bunch of guys who were Pro Bowlers or All-Pros a couple times in their career.
Ray Perkins, I think, played on that team too, but I'm not sure. I think he did.
No, I don't have it up in front of me right now.
You shouldn't have to have it up in front of you, but I know you're young, so I'll let it go. All right, so where are we at? My number six?
Yes, I think you're number six.
All right, number six. I've got the 1998 Minnesota Vikings. They were 15-1, and at the point, the Vikings scored a career or a record of 556 points on the season. They were led by Randall Cunningham, a dominant defensive line. You know, they had some studs on that D-line. And they had a high-flying trio of receivers. Yeah, this team had it all. You know, you had a rookie, Randy Moss, who had one of the greatest rookie seasons in NFL history from a wide receiver. You had a Hall of Famer in Chris Carter. And this was a team that was just really damn good. And the thing is, Randall Cunningham began the season as a backup to Brad Johnson. He took over when Johnson got hurt early in the season. And from there, he was the best quarterback in the NFL the rest of the year. They had 12 victories by double digits. And unfortunately, they ran into the dirty bird, the Atlanta Falcons. They lost 30-27 in overtime when Gary Anderson missed his only kick of the entire season at the end of, that would have won them the game, basically. So I would have loved to see what the 98 Vikings would have done against the 98 Broncos. I'm pretty sure the 98 Broncos would have beat them by double digits, but it would have been a lot more interesting, I think, than Atlanta.
Yeah, I think so, too. And they had a bunch of Hall of Famers on that team, guys like Chris Carr, Randy Moss, who brought up, but also Randall McDaniel up front at guard and John Randall on the other side of the ball. So they have a bunch of Hall of Famers on this team. And it comes down to Gary Anderson missing that one kick, the only kick he missed all year. And it ends up costing them their second loss in the season. They lost one game in the regular season, and they go lose against Atlanta. That's something you just don't expect to lose to a Falcons team like that. The leg of a kicker has been accurate for you all year long.
Yeah, that was a great upset. I think the week before that in the divisional playoff, Atlanta had beaten Steve Young and the 49ers, which I don't think was much of a surprise because Atlanta, I think, was the home team in that game. All right, who do you got at number six, Sam?
Number six, a more recent team you probably won't like, but I have the St. Louis Rams from 2001. That was the year they lost to the Patriots. It was a 14-2 Rams team. This is still the greatest show on turf, by the way. With Kurt Warner, was the first team All-Pro that year. Marshall Faulk, obviously you know the guys on this team. Torrey Holt, Isaac Bruce, Rolando Pace. Defensively, you got Aeneas Williams is there. He's probably your best defensive player. Him and Ludden Fletcher. I mean, it's not a great defense, obviously. He's fairly one-sided, but he's still a historic offense.
Yeah, I can see having him in there. My thing here is, Sam, I don't like to do a whole lot of research. So you're going to see mainly teams from the 70s and 80s with me because I can do that without having to read anything. And if I read it, I'm reading my own stuff. So what the hell? I could see it. And that game's on Mike Martz. You got to give the ball. If you give the ball to Marshall Faulk 10 more times, you probably win. It's also on the officials. You watch that game. The New England Patriots were allowed to basically hold the Rams at the line of scrimmage, made things difficult. But the thing that stood out to me in that game, I think you got like a minute and a half left. You got no timeouts or one timeout. Tom Brady's got the ball inside the 20. I remember John Madden saying, what a smart move here is just run the clock out and go to overtime. And Bill Belichick decides to gamble. You know, Brady hits a couple quick passes to the backs. Then he does throw the ball 15, 20 yards down the field for a couple strikes. It ends with field goal that wins them the Super Bowl. So I could see the Rams being that high because the Rams team the year before was a great football team. And I think people miss this also with that Rams team. Their defense was much better than what people remember because everybody just remembers all the points scored.
Yeah, I actually just looked it up. It was the Rams had the third best rushing defense and 11th best passing defense. So not an elite group, but one of the better groups probably in the league.
Yeah, they were a top 10 defense in the league.
Yeah, and it gets overshadowed because, like I said, you have Kurt Warner and all those Hall of Famers on the offensive side.
Well, and the thing is this, though, once again, it's proof that Bill Belichick can win without Tom Brady because, I mean, Tom Brady played, but this was a game that was won by the Patriots' defense. They were actually up 17-3 in this game, I think, midway through the third quarter. And this was a Rams team that scored a lot of points on everybody. I think they'd beaten the Patriots earlier in the season. So this was one of the biggest upsets. I think maybe the second biggest upset in Super Bowl history behind Super Bowl III.
Wait, and Brady only threw for 145 yards in that game. So while he was money down the stretch, it wasn't like he was lighting them up left and right. Kurt Warner, on the other hand, had thrown two picks in the game. So the defense for New England was really carried them here to win this
game. I think one of them was a pick six, too, wasn't it? Was it Ty Law?
Yeah, it's Ty Law.
Yeah.
It's Ty Law.
Yeah, so when you look at that, I mean, people will say, well, what about Super Bowl 42? Well, Super Bowl 4, this is the thing, though. People forget, Tom Brady wasn't even supposed to be the starting quarterback.
No.
It was supposed to be Drew Bledsoe. The Patriots weren't even supposed to be in the playoffs. You know, I think most people thought the Giants would make the playoffs the year they won the Super Bowl. And they also played a 38-35 game right at the end of the season also. So, to me, those are the top three upsets, whatever order you want to put them in, put them in. I can't quantify 68 very good because that happened like 11 months before I was born. So I'll back off of that one. Who do you got at number five, Sam?
Yeah, number five, I got the 1967 Oakland Raiders. This is, you know, went 13-1, so only 14 game seasons back then, but they lost the Super Bowl to the Green Bay Packers 14-33, a pretty significant drubbing for them. But I mean, they were a complete team. This was a team that was top three in both passing and rushing on offense. And top three in both passing and rushing on defense. They were one of the best overall teams in the NFL that year. Daryl LaMonica was the quarterback, who had two pretty good years, two pretty outstanding seasons in the NFL. They had some more weapons around him. It wasn't maybe the most talented Raiders team. We certainly saw later additions that were better. But to not win the Super Bowl when you had that good of an offensive defense is pretty notable.
Well, this was a team that I think you got a question because they played in the AFL at the time. But I think their only loss was to Joe Namath and the Jets that year. Not 100% sure, but I think it was. They had a great offensive line. Jim Otto, Jim Harvey, Bob Cruz, Harry Shue, Gene Upshaw. You had Fred Biletnikoff, one of the great receivers of all time. George Blanda was the backup quarterback. Willie Brown at DB. I mean, this was a damn good football team, and this is a team that won probably their last 12 games in a row. And in the AFL championship, I believe they beat the Houston Oilers, and they beat them pretty bad. I think it was like 30-7 or something.
It's 40-7.
40-7, yeah. So I could see having them there. I just questioned the competition in the AFL depth-wise at that time, but I could see having them there. My number five is the 1983 Washington Redskins. And I think this, I think the thing you forget is this. The year before this, they won the Super Bowl. They were the defending world champions, and they steamrolled everybody in 1983, except for the Raiders. And I think their only losses, they lost to Green Bay Monday Night Football, 48-47, one of the best Monday night games ever played. They lost their home or season opener. I think it was at home to Dallas, 31-30. I remember that because that's the game Howard Cosell got in trouble because who was it? Charlie Brown, I think it was, catches the ball and he's running with it, or Alvin Garrett. And Howard Cosell yells during the broadcast, look at that little monkey run. And Howard was pretty much done on Monday Night Football after that. They beat the Raiders on a Sunday night special. I remember watching this game, 37-35, one of the great games in Sunday Night Football history. They were led by the 83 NFL AP MVP, Joe Theismann. They have this devastating running game at the Hogs up front. John Riggins, who had his finest season. I think he ran for close to 1,500 yards. And I think a then record 24 or 25 touchdowns. And in the playoffs, they beat the Rams and Eric Dickerson 51-7. And the NFC Championship game, though, was the game that really gets me because I really think the 49ers were better this year or that year. And I know we've talked about it in previous shows. It was one of the biggest screw jobs I've ever seen. But the Redskins were up 21-0, and they ended up winning 24-21 in the last minute. Joe Montana threw three touchdown passes for the 49ers to tie the game. That was in probably an 8 or 9 minute time span in the fourth quarter. And then you had a holding call on Ronnie Lott on a third and long when the Redskins were inside their own 13. It gives them a first down. They eventually go down and kick the field goal to win. And then what I do think was the greatest, single greatest regular season game in NFL history, and I think you can find it on YouTube, the Redskins had beaten the Raiders 37-35, I think it was, in the regular season. So I was talking to my buddy Joe from Jersey today, and I told him this last Super Bowl really reminded me of Super Bowl 18, where you had all this hype and how it was going to be a great game, and it's just one team was significantly better than the other because the other kept making mistakes. And this was a game where 14-3, there's 12 seconds left. The Raiders called timeout. The Redskins, for some reason, inside their own 10, under a minute left in the half, down 14-3, decided to throw a screen pass over to Joe Washington or a swing pass. The interesting thing was they had beaten the Raiders on that play in the regular season game that they won 37-35. Joe Washington had one of the great games any running backs ever had catching the ball wise in that game. And Charlie Sumner was the defensive coordinator for the Raiders, and he called timeout. And he's got Jack Squirek, who me and Steve Risley had on a couple years ago on the show to talk about this. And Charlie Sumner told him, he said, hey, you remember that play they beat you on for a touchdown in the regular season? He said, they're going to run that right now. If you jump that, you'll walk into the end zone. He jumps it. Theismann throws it. Jack Squirek intercepts it. Jack Squirek goes into NFL history. He was a nondescript role player, but he had that one moment where he catches the ball. They put him on the front of Sports Illustrated with the ball above his head. Jack Squirek's a great guy. But from there, they just kind of rolled. Marcus Allen rolled him. But that Redskins team was a great football team. And I think that if there is any competition for Bill Belichick as the NFL's greatest coach, I think it comes from Joe Gibbs, which most people would not think. But for me, Joe Gibbs won 3 Super Bowls with Joe Theismann, Doug Williams, Mark Rippon. Need we say more?
No, I mean, think about all the great coaches. Most of the time, they have great quarterbacks. Tom Landry's had great quarterbacks. Chuck Noll had great quarterback, and Terry Bradshaw. But Joe Gibbs, like you said, had a multitude of different quarterbacks and won Super Bowls in a fairly spaced out time frame.
Yeah, and as Mad Chad says, those Bills teams, and once again, I think the Redskins beat them because they had Joe Gibbs. They lose the game to the Cowboys. They had Jimmy Johnson. They just had better coaching. They had better players. But, I mean, the Bills and Redskins weren't that far apart from each other, I don't think, talent-wise, in 1991. All right, my number 4, the 1967 Los Angeles Rams. And the Rams got killed by this stuff, but we'll get to it in a second. They were led by Roman Gabriel, who's been a guest on the NFL Legends show. You can find it on thegruelingtruth.com. And I actually drank a milkshake with him a few years ago in North Carolina. I did, really. And they had the famed fearsome foursome defense, and they dominated the competition. Their biggest win of the season was when they beat the eventual Super Bowl champion Green Bay Packers. Now, pay attention to this. They had 10 blowout victories by more than 10 points with a per-point game differential of 14.4, a turnover margin of 16. Unfortunately, the Rams were done in by a rule which rotated home teams each year for the playoffs. That meant that even though the Rams had a better record than the Packers, and they had even beaten them during the season, they still had to travel to Green Bay to play in frigid Lambeau Field, and they eventually lost 28-7. I think this was perhaps Coach George Allen's finest team. They ended the season ranked number 1 on both offense and defense, and as we go higher, I'll give you another Rams team where the same thing happened. But if this game's played in L.A., I think there's a big case to make. Maybe the Rams win this Super Bowl and maybe change the entire course of NFL history. The Lombardi may not even be the Lombardi trophy.
Might be the George Allen trophy.
Yeah.
Think about it. Yeah, that changes everything. That makes a huge difference in how everything plays out in NFL history.
So you didn't have the Rams from 67 in the list?
I didn't. I had Oakland from 67, remember?
They were number 1 on offense and defense, Sam.
I didn't want to have the same exact list as you. I had to change it up a little bit.
Oh, so you looked at my list.
I peeked a little bit.
Okay. Well, who you got? Where are we at? Your number 4?
Yeah, my number 4. This one, I have much higher than you did. I mean, it's the 76 Pittsburgh Steelers. I have much higher. They were 10-4, so I can understand why you said they maybe should be lower. But they had a lot of injuries there. I think if this team is...
Hey, I will give you why I think they should be lower with my number 3. But go ahead.
No, I just think if they were healthier, they hadn't been bitten by injuries there in the playoffs and also during the regular season, I think this is probably a 12 or 13 win team. And I didn't think we can put them much higher.
But how about this? I got number 3 to 76 Patriots. The 76 Patriots are why I put the 76 Steelers so low. Because the 76 Patriots were screwed by Ben Dreith on a bad call that basically destroyed the Patriots' chances of winning the game. And, you know, Bill Belichick was then an assistant for the Detroit Lions in 1976. He said that Patriots team was one of the most talented teams he'd ever seen. They actually, in back-to-back weeks during the season, they beat the Oakland Raiders, who won the Super Bowl and went 13-1. They gave the Raiders their only loss, 48-17. And the next week, everybody thought, well, they couldn't do it again. They beat the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I think this is before Bradshaw was hurt. So the reason that I rank – the Steelers at number 9 is because I've got this Patriots team here at number 3. And that tells me the Steelers were the 3rd best team in the AFC, because I think even healthy, the Steelers don't beat the Raiders that year, because I think it was the Raiders' year. But really, in the end, I think maybe it was the Patriots' year, and it was just taken, because the Ben Drive call against Sugar Bear Hamilton for the roughing the passer was a horrible call that really led to Oakland winning that game and then going on to beat up Pittsburgh and then to massacre the Minnesota Vikings.
That was a very talented offensive line for New England, right? And they had John Hanna, who's obviously, I think, the greatest guard of all time, arguably.
Well, you had one of the greatest corners of all time in Mike Haynes also.
Yeah, and so you had an overall, you had a very talented team, and they, like I said, lost to Oakland. But Oakland is arguably, was the best, team in the NFL that year by far. I think there's not really much of a gap.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't much gap between those three teams. But, all right, who do you got at number 2, Sam?
I'm at my number 3 team right now.
Well, then give me number 3, Sam. Quit being so hard.
I get the 1998 Minnesota Vikings. And again, this is mostly the hit because they had that great offense and they went 15-1. And it comes down to just that one field goal. They would have forced overtime. I'm pretty sure they would have won overtime by the way the game was going at that point against Atlanta, but they come up short. Hall of Famers on both sides of the ball. Guys who get highly underrated like Randall McDaniel and John Randall. And you didn't have Randall McDaniel in your top 12 Minnesota Vikings of all time, by the way. I noticed that the other day.
Yeah, I know. He started off at number 4 and ended up out of it.
How did that happen?
Because I thought of other people.
You thought of other people who played in the 70s and 80s probably, right?
Well, yeah, because that's when the Vikings were at their best, and that's when I watched them all the time. Hey, I had John Randall ranked high.
You did. You did. I think you and Randall actually met him before.
Yeah, I love John Randall. He was a bad dude. And I put Ed White at 3 just because people forget about how great Ed White was. Chuck Foreman even brought up Ed White.
Yeah, he did.
And, I mean, with the Minnesota Vikings from the 70s to the late 90s, you can put together a list of the top 25 and have all legends.
Well, yeah, that's why I included. I think I had one of those teams. I had the 69 Vikings at number 10. I thought about putting the 76 Vikings on the list because they had so many teams with all Hall of Famers.
See, actually, I think the 75 Vikings were the best Viking team.
Really? The 75 ones were better.
Yeah, 75. They were the number one seed. I mean, they won their division. I think they had the best record. And they lost on the Hail Mary pass. And without that, I think they would have played in Super Bowl 10. And I think that was a team that, pardon me, but I think it's a team that could have beaten the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think they were better than the year before when they lost to the Steelers in a close game. They were 12-2 that year. And, I mean, without the Hail Mary pass, you know?
Yeah, they'd be Dallas then.
Yeah, and, I mean, they would have played the Rams the next week, and it seemed like they always beat the Rams in the playoffs. I don't know why, they did. I mean, the Rams were always really good, but they always ran into that team, which killed them. And in 75, you had a completely healthy target, then you had Chuck Foreman. You had all the guys you normally had. But I think it was the best Minnesota Viking team that we've seen. And I think they started the year off like 10-0. They lost to the Redskins, who were a perennial playoff team with George Allen around that time, by a point at Washington. They lost by a touchdown at Detroit. They won everything else. And it just went bad against the Cowboys in the playoffs. And like I said, for the Vikings, it seemed to almost always go bad at some point in the playoffs.
No, that's why they're on my list twice. This always seems to go wrong for whatever reason.
All right, my number 2, the 1973 Los Angeles Rams. Here we go with that home field stuff again. But this was Chuck Knox's first team. It was probably his best in L.A. The 73 Rams started the season with 6 straight wins. They had 2 close losses on the road to the Vikings and the Falcons. They followed that with another 6-game winning streak to end the season. They led the NFL in point differential, turnover margin, blowout victories. Harold Jackson led all NFL receivers in touchdowns with 13. And despite being tied with Minnesota and Miami for the best record in the NFL, and despite beating Dallas earlier in the season, they had to travel to Dallas for the divisional playoff game. They lose 27-16. And, of course, up until the mid-70s, I think it was 1976 maybe, you know, home field advantage in the NFL playoffs was dependent on who had the best record once you get to 76. But before that, It wasn't. It was either 75 or 76 when it went to the home field advantage to the team with the best record. But this is the second time that the Rams got screwed by a stupid rule.
And the Rams seem to have trouble in the playoffs in kind of situations. Like you said, Kurt Warner going to be able to win in St. Louis with that version of the Rams, which of course was a little bit different. Being able to win that version of the Rams kind of got the franchise up again, considering they had lost so many close games in the playoffs during this era.
Yeah, and the thing about this year is 1973 was the start of seven straight division titles for the Rams, and their NFL draft in 1973 for the Rams was Fred Dreyer, Cullen Bryant, Ron Jaworski, Jim Youngblood, first four picks.
Yeah, so they dominate, basically. They picked a bunch of future Pro Bowlers and Hall of Famers.
And they actually traded Deacon Jones for Cullen Bryant. Or they traded Cullen Bryant for Deacon Jones. Or they traded Deacon Jones. Because Deacon Jones went to the Chargers. They got the Chargers' second pick. They got Cullen Bryant, who was a solid running back for the next 10 years. And Deacon Jones, by 1973, was pretty much just a shadow of himself. They had John Hadle as the starting quarterback. Hadle might even win the MVP that year. I'm not sure. You might want to check that out. And their backup quarterback was James Harris. The interesting thing about James Harris, I put him on my list of top 10 quarterbacks of the 70s just because I think he could have been. He really wasn't, but he took them, I think, the next 3 years to the NFC Championship game, and then they got rid of his ass, and they started playing Ron Jaworski. But your three quarterbacks on this roster were Hadle, Harris, and Jaworski. That's three pretty good ones. And, of course, they kind of ended this run in 1979 by losing to your Steelers in the Super Bowl. The interesting thing, 1979 was probably their worst season in the regular season because they were a wild card team that only went 9-7, and then they got hot and went all the way, and they upset the Cowboys. And the other thing about 1973 is the Cowboys the next week as the home team got upset by the Minnesota Vikings, who would then go on to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and Hadle did not win the MVP that year, but it was a first team all pro. I don't know who won the MVP that season, but it wasn't Hadle.
Nobody cares. All right, Sam, number two.
No, I have to agree with you. I think my top two teams are the same as yours. It's the 73 Rams. I can't argue with this one. Even though I like to be different than you in these selections, I can't argue. It's probably the best team.
I really, when looking at this, I think that I would switch and put the 67 Rams over the 73 Rams.
Really, you would?
Yeah, just because of Roman Gabriel. And that, and I think the 67 Rams losing to Green Bay is not as bad as the Rams in 1973 losing 27-16 to a Dallas team that would lose the next week to the Minnesota Vikings.
All right, I see what you're saying there.
So
does coaching come into it a little bit? Does coaching play a role in this whole thing?
From which year? 73?
Is it different? Like the difference in coaching is obviously it's 73 and what was the other one? It was 67. Does the head coach make a difference in these situations?
Yeah, I like George Allen better than Chuck Knox. Not by a lot. Chuck Knox was a hell of a coach. Chuck Knox, for some reason, just couldn't get to the Super Bowl. It seemed like every year he would be in the playoffs. And Chuck Knox, he took this Rams team from George Allen. Allen never should have been fired, but Allen couldn't get along with owner for the Rams, Carol Rosenbloom. So Rosenbloom fired Allen. They hire Knox. Knox goes, takes him to the playoffs 73 through 77 or 78. And then I think they fired him after maybe 77. I'm not sure. You'd have to check me on that one. But then they hire Ray Malavasi. And the interesting thing here is Knox goes to Buffalo. And the Buffalo Bills were a terrible football team. You know, they made the playoffs in 74, lost 32-14 to the Pittsburgh Steelers when they had O.J. Simpson. That's the only time they made the playoffs with O.J. After 74, they kind of dropped off the face of the earth. Chuck Knox goes there. Within a year or two, he's got them in the playoffs. In 1980, they almost upset that great Chargers team in San Diego. They lose 20-14. Joe Ferguson's the quarterback. 1981, they upset the Jets in the wild card game in New York. Then they go to Cincinnati and lose 28-21, and that was a game where the Bills actually got a big first down, were about to score and tie the game, but they had a delay of game call on a 4th-and-10 play that brought it back. The big completion for the first down made it 4th-and-15. They didn't get the first down. The Bengals beat them then, and then they kind of fell back into oblivion until you get around 1986-87 when Marv Levy and Jim Kelly get there.
So Knox was a good head coach. Maybe we can all agree that George Allen was significantly better, but he was a Hall of Famer for a reason compared to Knox, who isn't.
Chuck Knox was really good. Chuck Knox was like a, I think he won close to 200 games.
I think he's just below Marty Schottenheimer on the all-time list.
Yeah, I think he's like 185, 190, somewhere around there. His problem
186.
He was like 7-11 in the playoffs, 7-10.
Yeah, so that's the killer. It's the playoff record for him and Schottenheimer.
Yeah, but the great thing about Knox is, I mean, the team that stands out to me with him was after Buffalo. He leaves Buffalo after 81 or 82. He goes to Seattle, and the Seahawks go to the playoffs right away, and not even the playoffs. They go to the AFC Championship game in 83, and they lost, I think it was 30-14. But that same year, I believe they beat that Raiders team twice in the regular season, including at LA. And then they went to the playoffs. I think they won the wild card game over Denver, and I think they won that game pretty easy. And then they had a huge upset. They go to Miami to play Dan Marino in his rookie season, and it was kind of muddy in Miami. And Seattle wins the game. Kurt Warner, legendary Seahawk running back, who you can find our interview with on thegruelingtruth.com. Kenny Easley, who you can also find an interview on thegruelingtruth.com with, both had a huge hand in that. They upset the Miami Dolphins, and then they go play for the AFC Championship the next week, but it was not to be. They lose in the L.A. Coliseum. I think it was 30-14. That may have been Knox's best coaching job, but the impressive thing about Knox is he took over a team that was really good in L.A. He kept them really good. He took over teams in Buffalo and Seattle that were not very good, and he made them really good.
Yeah, it did. And they made Seattle the first 2 years he was there. They missed in 85, and they missed again in 86. But they won 10 games that year. So they were always between 8 to 12 wins or 8 to 10 wins during his time in Seattle, at least the first 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, and really, he made the playoffs in 88, too. I think it was 9-7. And that was the year they lost to the Bengals 21-10. But that was, they played the last game of the season at LA against the Raiders. Winner goes to the playoffs. And I think the Seahawks beat them something like 45-37. So they had a really good offense. That would have been, I think, Dave Craig at quarterback. He had Steve Largent catching the ball. Kurt Warner running the ball. That was a very underrated team. Kenny Easley, who was one of the great safeties in NFL history, if it wasn't for his, you know, kidney and liver issues, where he only played 6 or 7 years. Luckily, he finally got in the Hall of Fame. We're at number one, which is the undefeated New England Patriots, until they ran into the New York Giants, Sam.
Yeah, and the Patriot record, Eli Manning. But apparently, those are the 2 years the Giants have been in the Super Bowl with Eli Manning, and they just won. They were just dominant defensively. I think that's what put them over the top. And Manning made the clutch throws in times they needed him to. Obviously, they had a great catch by Mario Manningham and David Tyree. But those New York defenses really helped them out quite a bit. And they did decent against the Patriots offense that was wrecking everyone. They held New England to just 14 points in the Super Bowl.
Well, the thing I remember about New England, though, is it's not like they were killing everybody come playoff time. And they only won that last regular season game 38-35. And they struggled with the Chargers, only beat them 21-12 in the championship game against the hurt Phillip Rivers.
Yeah, I guess they didn't destroy them that badly in that situation. So, and those Chargers teams were probably the best Chargers teams that ever came out there. They had some success with Phillip Rivers early in his career. Once he hit 2010, I think the Chargers were much worse. But around that time, the Chargers were still a formidable team.
How about this? Did you know Brian Daboll was actually the wide receivers coach on that team the year before? But then he left to go to the Jets. So Daboll was actually a Bill Belichick guy.
I had no idea.
Yeah. See, you learn something new every day.
Apparently. Especially, and yeah, if he's a Bill Belichick guy, adds a couple more guys to maybe his head coaching trees. We'll see Daboll. I'm sure Daboll will get a job next year.
Yeah, he probably should have got a job this year over the guys that got jobs.
Yeah, over almost all of them.
Yeah, Josh McDaniels was still the offensive coordinator then.
Was he really?
Yeah, Kevin.
It's been that long. I didn't realize it's been that long. I thought he was there more recently.
Yeah, he'd definitely be screwed if it wasn't for his daddy. Yeah. Hey, you know the Dolphins started off the year with 18 straight wins too until they lost that Super Bowl.
You mean the Patriots?
Yeah, Patriots. I don't know what I said, but the interesting thing here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Their first 8 wins were all blowouts, and then they beat Peyton Manning at Indy 24-20, and then they struggled. They only beat the Eagles by 3. They beat the Ravens by 3. And really, when you look at the end of the season, this was a team that played much better the first 8 games than they did the last half of the season.
Wait, you mentioned that final game against the Giants in the regular season. They won 38-35, so they were giving up a lot more points on defense. They've done well early in the season, but I think they really – I don't know what it was. Maybe there was an injury I hadn't seen here. Maybe there was an injury there that kind of messed the defense up a little bit. Maybe it's just a war of attrition kind of. But they definitely fell off there towards the end of the year. They had some really good defensive players. They had Vince Wilfork, who obviously had a very successful career there, Mike Vrabel, Asante Samuel. They had a bunch of guys defensively who are high-impact players.
Yeah, and a pretty good quarterback and coach.
Well, yeah, that helps out a little bit having those two there.
You know, the thing that's amazing here is this. You can make the case that except for this last Super Bowl, Tom Brady could have lost every Super Bowl he was in, but he also could have won every Super Bowl he was in.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Think about, because he could have easily have won those Giants ones. It wasn't like the Giants blew him out or anything like that.
Well, and the Eagles, if the right guard doesn't miss the block, I mean, does anybody doubt the pad that he's not taking them down, scoring a touchdown, getting a two-point conversion, and the game's going to overtime? And then all Philadelphia craps their pants. The Patriots win the toss. He goes down. He scores a touchdown. They win the game.
Yeah, it's just that those little things in the game. And with the Falcons, just can just buy a first down. Maybe Atlanta wins that game. But Tommy pulls off one of the best comebacks.
They didn't need to buy a first down. If they just would have not stopped the ball until there was a second or two left on the clock, they would have won the game. Not even about first downs. That was just bad coaching. So easily, Tom Brady could be 10-0 in Super Bowls right now.
Yeah, it's very close.
That'd be scary as hell.
Having someone, once you hit 10, if you were 10-0 in Super Bowls, I mean, that's, as it is, he's someone we've never really seen before in NFL history in terms of the winning. If you were 10-0, that'd be, they would need to make a whole new Hall of Fame just for Tom Brady at that point.
Well, Otto Graham did play in 10 straight championship games all 10 years he played. So it's not like we haven't seen somebody like that. But also,
but there were fewer teams back then.
Well, Otto's doesn't matter. Does that make it harder? I mean, when you have better players?
I guess you would, right?
I don't know. Maybe. It could go either way.
Yeah.
It could go either way. But the other thing is this. His first three, I think, were AFC championships, so it wasn't really NFL championships. And for some reason, anybody that was born after 1970, or really after 1968, really, when the Super Bowl started, or 66, most people don't even consider those real championships anyways.
Which is kind of BS. I mean, I would consider them real championships. I have them in my top 10 for quarterbacks all the time. When we did the list last year, I had them pretty high, actually.
Well, I mean, I think the amount of winning and the fact that he did it up until that point better than anybody ever did it has to put him up there. I mean, I think he has to be top 5 from what he accomplished.
Yeah. Because I don't have the full record here because it doesn't show me the full record for during his starting career, but he was 57-13-1 during the final 6 years of his career, basically a first-team All-Pro every single season, leading the NFL across the board in almost all statistical categories. So I don't see how he can possibly pass on someone who won 4 AAFC championships and 3 NFL championships.
Now, is Tom Brady the greatest football player of all time?
Yeah, I'd probably give it to him.
You're
talking about – no? You don't think so?
Not even close. He just plays quarterback.
All right, who's the greatest football player of all time?
The greatest football player of all time, if you pay attention to my articles, was Sammy Ball.
Okay.
Sammy Ball led the Redskins to the NFL championship as their starting quarterback, punter, kicker, and defensive back. In the 1937 NFL championship game, he threw for 335 yards, 3 touchdowns. And that stood as a rookie record for yards passing in a playoff game until Russell Wilson broke it in 2012. Now, get this. In 1942, he led an upset of the undefeated Bears in the championship, 14-6. He threw a TD pass, but more importantly, he pinned the Bears' vaunted defense in bad field position all game long, including in the last 5 minutes, an 85-yard kick that pinned them on the one-yard line. His most impressive year was 1943. He led the league in passing, punting, and interceptions.
Yeah, 11 interceptions.
Yeah, this is a dude, 11 interceptions. But he averaged almost 46 yards a punt, and that was the old weird-looking ball that wasn't flying that far. And I think the greatest single-game performance in NFL history, in a 42-20 win over the Detroit Lions, Sammy set a record that I believe will never be broken as he threw 4 touchdown passes on offense and intercepted 4 passes on defense. That's the greatest football player that ever lived, and it's not even close.
I guess you're taking to him doing everything. Yeah, I think that probably would be the greatest football player.
Dude, think about this, though. I mean, he set records at every position that stood for like 50 or 60 years. I mean, 1945, he completed over 70% of his passes. I mean, dude, in 1965, most guys still couldn't complete 55%. And his record of 70.33 stood from 1945 to 1982 when Kenny Anderson broke it. And it still stands to this day as one of the top six or seven seasons, I think, of all time. I say that because it was top four at the time I wrote the article, but that was like 4 years ago.
Yeah, it's probably fallen off quite a bit. Drew Brees has thrown like over 70% for every year, pretty much. From
yeah. And you also had 1947, Sammy Baldé. You know, he threw for 335 yards and six touchdowns. I mean, and what makes that amazing to me is the fact that those are the numbers you see today. And really, we don't see many guys throwing six touchdown passes then. He still holds four NFL records to this day, and he has a record six NFL passing titles, which was tied by Steve Young.
Well, yeah, think about it. This guy's playing in the late 30s, all the way through the 40s into the early 50s. So this is a guy who's 70 years ahead of his time.
Yeah,
in some sense.
In 1940, he averaged 51.4 yards per punt for an entire season. And as a quarterback, that same season, he still holds the record for yards. Still holds the record. Did you hear that? Still holds the record for yards per attempt in a single game with 18.4 yards per attempt. As a punter, he retired with a career punting average of 45.1 yards, which is second all time, by the way.
Man, he led the NFL in yards per punt, I think, five times during his career. So
yeah, and he also had the lowest interception percentage five times. So, I mean, don't give me all this Tom Brady crap. Tom Brady can't punt the ball 46 yards, and he can't pick off 11 passes in a year. The greatest football player that ever lived was Sammy Ball. And anybody ever tell you different, stupid. And this is the thing. It's not like he was doing it, and what he did at that time was special. If he put those numbers up right now, Sam, he would be a freaking complete legend
on
social media. And the thing is, the records he put up back then, a lot of them still stand today. So say what you want about him. The dude was a bad man. And you got to go back and look at some of the old NFL Films interviews with him. Because they asked him one time if he was what made him special. And he said, because I'm GD, the best son of a bitch to ever play football. And he was like 95 years old. There was drool coming down his face. And he said, I could go out there right now and whip somebody's ass. And I believed him. So.
I guess Slinging Sammy did have a personality. I did hear about that.
Yeah. I mean, he was the greatest football player that ever lived. Really. I mean, Tom Brady just throws a football and hands it off. I mean,
you know how it was. Remember when J.J. Watt scored like three touchdowns the 1 year on offense? And the internet went crazy because of it.
Oh, yeah, like he's a real running back. Yeah, they're giving him the ball at the 1 yard line, or they're throwing him a pass from 10 yards away. Shut the hell up. Go watch Sammy Ball.
Exactly.
We need to just have a Sammy Ball show. We need to have Risley on if Risley thinks Tom Brady's the greatest player of all time, because we could roast him on this.
You could. You're looking for every way to potentially get Steve Risley.
Yeah, because there is no way anybody can refute Sammy Ball.
No, because no one's ever going to do the same thing again. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, and the fact that he still holds multiple NFL records tells you that what he did was special then. It would still be special now.
Yeah.
Of course, you probably couldn't do it now. But with nutrition and everything the way it is now, who's to say that he wouldn't? Other than the fact there would be no coach with the balls to let him do it.
That's true. And probably no player who – I don't know. Money-wise, I wonder –
oh, there's players that want to. If you could do all three, you know how much money you can make.
Sponsorship like deals.
I'm the best punter. I'm the best corner. I'm the best quarterback. Pay me $400 million a year. But maybe Dak needs to start punting and playing DB to get that $40 million.
Yeah, maybe Jared Jones will actually sign him then.
Yeah. All right, Sam. Anything else before we wrap it up?
Nope. I think we've covered everything.
Make sure you follow Sam Teets at SamTeets33. Make sure you go to PassiveParity.direct. Right now, a special 2 months of CBD for the price of one. Check out PassiveParity.direct. Me and Sam will be back probably with Steve Risley on Monday to have a season ending ish or year or year end review of the season, which Risley wants to do. So we're going to do that on Monday at 1 o'clock. Sunday night at 7 o'clock, we will have the old time boxing show where we revisit the legendary fight between Big George Foreman and Evander the Real Deal Holyfield. Check me and Chris Shelton out at 7 o'clock Sunday night for that. But for now, for Sam Teets, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been watching and listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak.